This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by the KTTH smartphone app. If you don't have it, text the keyword app, APP, to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
Well, it was a pandering fest last night on CNN as they held the LGBTQ panel, where they had every single candidate who qualified get their hour's worth of town hall time. And the fact of the matter is, you didn't really get all that much from the candidates other than displaying, in part, how extreme they are on some of these issues, because there's not that much difference between any of the candidates. So you basically heard them say pretty much the same thing hour after hour. But there was a lot of virtue signaling out there without any substance whatsoever. And a lot of people pointed out that CNN was kind of using as props LGBTQ children. And when I say children, I mean literal children, like a 9-year-old transgender kid. And a lot of folks will point out, 9 years old, you probably don't know whether or not you are transgender. That maybe this is a parent doing, a parent pushing you in one particular direction than not. Because that's a very adult and mature position to take. 9 years old seems a little bit early. And then when you listen to the question that one of the kids asked, very clearly was written by an adult.
My name is Jacob, and I'm a 9-year-old transgender American.
Okay, so first of all, to say transgender American, that's a very specific piece of language that adult activists use. I don't personally care with that. I don't say I'm a gay American. I just say I'm gay, and most people say they're straight or transgender or whatever it is. They don't say transgender American. That's written by an adult.
Hey, respect the language of this transgender American.
What do you do for a living? I am a producer American. Is that how you do it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everywhere I go. I'm an American producer.
My question is...
All right. Hold on.
What will you do in your first week as president to make sure that kids like me feel safer in schools? And what do you think schools need to do better to make sure that I don't have to worry about anything but my homework?
Oh, I like that question, Jacob.
Okay, so an adult wrote that question. Okay, this 9-year-old's not that clever. All I want to pay attention to is my homework and not an existential threat on my existence. Like, okay, fine. At least Elizabeth Warren, in the 95 seconds that we have in front of me, I'm assuming she's going to be very specific with an answer.
So let me start by saying I want to have a Secretary of Education who both believes in public education and believes in the value of every one of our kids and is willing to enforce our civil rights laws.
Okay, so just real quickly, because what she just said there is absolutely nonsense, and she wants you to believe that Betsy DeVos does not actually support public education simply because she also holds a position that is in favor of charter schools. That in their world, you cannot hold both positions. It is, of course, a ridiculous point to be made, because that's a bad faith argument. But then she basically says, yeah, she's a bigot. Betsy DeVos doesn't support transgender because she doesn't support civil rights. So let's hear her give example after example after example to back up her ridiculous point.
Out that when the Department of Education was set up many years ago,
ma'am, can you stop talking to me like I'm like a 9-year-old kid? Because I know I am a 9-year-old kid, but your tone sounds condescending. And an adult wrote this question, so can you please talk to me like one?
The Secretary of Education was given a whole lot of power over the public schools and over the rules and how they're enforced.
Okay.
And we've had some secretaries of education who've been better, and we've had one that's been a whole lot worse. Her name is Betsy DeVos.
See that coming.
When I'm president, she'll be gone.
Okay. So we're now a minute in, and she hasn't given a specific example at all to back up her claim. Not a single example at all. But we got 27 seconds left.
And Here's my plan, Jacob.
Okay, let's get a plan.
I'm going to find just the right Secretary of Education, but here's what I plan to do. I want to make sure that the person I think is the right Secretary of Education meets you and hears your story, and then I want you to tell me if you think that's the right person, and then we'll make the deal. That sound good?
Okay, so that's your plan. You've not backed up the claim that Betsy DeVos is a bigot. You've not expressed why you don't even like Betsy DeVos. Not a single example was given on something that she stands for that you don't. And your plan, specifically, is to appoint someone that 9-year-old Jacob supports. That's it.
Yes.
That's it.
Did
you cut out any details of that answer?
9-year-old Jacob is going to decide what is best for our country.
The thing is... Sorry, I got distracted because the U.S. men's national team just scored another goal. It's 2-0 they've only been playing 4 minutes. And now for people who don't want me talking about soccer, just real quick, they're playing Cuba. So now you guys care.
Yeah.
Okay, just throwing that out.
Once it's U.S. national team, people care.
No one cares about soccer on the show, unfortunately, other than us. But just real quick, let me put a bow on this issue with Elizabeth Warren. When you're going to make that kind of claim that you're going to say that someone's a bigot, you should back it up with some kind of fact. Now, I know that progressives don't like to work within that world, not these progressives in a panel like this, because this is all about virtue signaling and showing how woke you are. This goes a little bit too far. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in King County?
King County leaders got together this week to discuss a regional plan on homelessness. That includes King County Councilmember Reagan Dunn's proposal. He was on the show. We talked to him about it, essentially saying, hey, we're going to pay for bus tickets to get homeless people to friends or family members anywhere they are in the country.
Where they can have housing and get the help they need. It works across the country.
Now, as I said, this is not meant to be a criticism of Reagan Dunn. This is not an innovative program. This is not a new idea. This is something that is already being used by Seattle, for example. I believe Federal Way is doing something similar. I believe parts of Pierce County or Snohomish County are doing it. It is a brilliant plan. And the fact of the matter is, we should be doing it in a much bigger level because it is so much cheaper of a way to get people the help that they actually need. People who are living out on the streets are very expensive to treat, right? Very expensive to get them in a shelter, get them the mental health care treatment they might need, or the addiction treatment they might need, or the job resources and skills that they may actually need at this point. What happens right now is it's much harder because they don't have a social structure in place here, a support system, to keep them on track. You've got some social worker who's going to be responsible for dozens and dozens and dozens of people who are not going to be able to give these individuals the assistance that they need, holding their hand every step of the way if they need that. When you put them in a place that they're familiar with, surrounded by people who actually care about them, because they're friends with them, because they're family members with them, you've got another person or persons we're going to help keep these people on the right path. It is in our best interest to get these folks indoors as fast as humanly possible and in treatment as fast as humanly possible. When you send them to neighborhoods in which they live and have that structure there, what happens is they've got that friend who's willing to let them sleep on the couch or in the spare bedroom for a few months as they get their life in order. You've got family members who don't even know where some of these homeless people are currently living. We've talked to a whole bunch of people locally, the news media has, homeless people here who came from out of state, and some of their family members don't even know where they are. Imagine the help that can be done if we can give them $200 in the form of a bus ticket or a plane ride or whatever it is to go back to their city that they live, that they have that structure. This is so worth it. And ultimately, it's probably the most efficient way, financially speaking, to actually get them on that right path. Is this the only solution? No. Will this help everyone? No. But I do think it's going to help a substantial portion of them. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. It is officially 3-0, the U.S. over Cuba in a U.S. men's national team. and Jordan Morris with the assist. That's assist number two, by the way, producer Peyton.
I'm seeing that.
What did I say before we went into the segment during the commercial break?
You said that Morris or Pulisic are going to have every assist.
Yep. Who's right so far?
So far, you.
Who's always right?
Say me.
Just do it. Just commit. Just
for the sake of the show, you.
See? Me. Did you know you can follow me on Instagram? I would love it if you would give me a follow. Fire up that Instagram app. Search for the screen name Jason Rantz, J-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. Give me a follow. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
Seahawks have another matchup this weekend, this time against the Cleveland Browns. It's on the road, so what can we expect? Joining me in studio, my good personal friend who loves to talk politics with us right before the microphone gets turned on, Bob Stelton from 710 ESPN Seattle. Thanks for stopping by. Let's talk.
Wait, we
about...
weren't recording that whole time? We weren't live on air? Wow.
Oh, my gosh. We would have had to bleep out a lot of stuff. So, Seahawks on the road. Come after another win that was a good win, a big win, but a win because of a botched kick and some... they're still underperforming their... Right?
Listen, they put themselves in a position to win the game. Oh, you gotta be there.
It's a ridiculous position.
It's not a ridiculous
position. They put themselves in a position to win that relied on a missed kick.
You didn't rely. You missed a kick as well.
No, I know, but that's my point. Kick. That's my point. Is like, they didn't outplay the other team. It was up... It was neck and neck. It was a very good game, right? And then they won because of a missed kick.
They won because they scored more points than the other team did.
Yes,
Russell Wilson threw more touchdowns than Jared Goff did. I'm not going to say they didn't make mistakes or they're... Listen, nobody plays a perfect game. And sometimes you rely on failures of your opposition.
Sure.
Sometimes you dictate that failure. Sometimes they do it on their own. It's circumstance. That's a tough end zone to kick in, as you saw with Myers kicking for the Seahawks. That's just been the nature, the history of that stadium. So you knew there was a shot. Zuerlein's one of the best kickers in the league. He missed it. It happens at that end of the end zone is weird. I don't know if it's the way it's structured in the wind, but when weird things happen, it's at that end of the end zone. So they put themselves in a spot to be there. They won the game.
What spot do they find themselves in going into Cleveland? How are the Browns doing this year?
The Browns aren't great. Browns just got throttled on Monday night. They look like a disaster. And they're a Jekyll and Hyde team because they beat the daylights out of the Baltimore Ravens, who look to be a decent team. Now, the problem is so many of these teams have played really weak teams that you don't have.
So you can't judge it.
You can't gauge how good are they really. The 49ers are undefeated, but they've played really nobody at this point. Patriots are 6-0. They've played nobody. So that's sort of the problem is coming to a hard and fast conclusion on this is a great team and this team is not very good. It's really hard to tell right now. But the Browns, to answer your question, don't feel together. They're 2-3. Baker Mayfield's got 8 interceptions on the year. He's completing just over 55% of his passes. They're a little they've had talent. They've got some really good players on that team, but they don't feel cohesive yet.
It feels, though, the way you set that up, like Rams coming to Seattle last week, where they've always been kind of tricky. They came off of a really stinging defeat that no one really expected, at least not in that way. And then they overperformed, arguably, right? And so what's the concern that the Cleveland Browns are going to say, you know what, we just screwed up that last game massively. There's a lot of pressure on our shoulders to perform. We're at home. It makes it a little bit easier.
I don't know if they haven't won at home yet. They're 0-2 at home at this point. And they just, listen, there's pressure on them because they were the darlings of the preseason. Everybody wanted to bet on them. They were the dark horse, put your money on them. They're going to be a playoff team, and ultimately they might be. Right now, when I watch them, I don't see a playoff team when I watch them play. They're not. They're just not together. As I said, they've got individual talent up and down the roster, but it's not together.
Okay.
So they play in a division where they could put a run on and maybe get themselves in the postseason, but right now, if I'm betting on them, I wouldn't bet on the Browns. I don't think they're a great team. I don't think they're as bad as we saw Monday. I don't think they're as good as they looked against Baltimore. I think they're probably somewhere in between. And if we're just talking about expectations, the Seahawks, despite it being a 10 a.m. game, which everybody freaks out about.
It's a ridiculous
thing. It is. It is. But despite it, it is tough to win on the road no matter who you're playing in the NFL. They should beat this team. They are a better team than the Cleveland Browns. Now, as much as I said about all these other teams, we don't know how good they are yet.
We know
That's true about the Seahawks as well. I don't really know how good they are yet. The Rams game was a good game because the Rams are a good team. That's a Super Bowl participant.
Doesn't that tell you how the Seahawks are? They are a good team that will sometimes hurt themselves, And sometimes they just rely on errors, but they're getting to the point where it does really come down to the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, but that's always been their nature, is they can go into the fourth quarter and they are completely at ease if they're behind.
Mm-hmm.
They're fine.
Arguably, it seems like that's when Russell Wilson actually
That's kind of their
performed.
Philosophy, yeah. though, is they'll kind of just grind you down. They're not going to come out of the gates chucking the ball down mm-hmm. the field. If you want to equate it to a fight, they're going body punches. They don't look like much. They don't show where there's no blood or anything.
Yeah.
But what it's doing is breaking your opponent down. So in the late rounds, you land that shot to the chin, they're broken down, and it knocks them
but
out.
But that is a dangerous philosophy.
It can be. It can burn you, but Pete's had way too much success with it to alter it. I know mm-hmm. it's not electric, and a lot of people feel like Russell Wilson's making $35 million a year. Let him throw the ball all over the place. Why would you do that when you've had this much success doing it this way? You won a Super Bowl. You got back to another Super Bowl. You've been to the playoffs every single year except for one under Pete Carroll. Why would you fix what's not broken?
So then what do the Seahawks specifically have to do this weekend to put themselves in a position where, you know, we're not worried about the last few minutes of the fourth quarter?
I think you take advantage of what is weak on that team. And what is weak with the Browns team is their offensive mm-hmm. line does not look good. And it hasn't looked good even when they've won. It looks porous. So this could be a get-right week for the pass rush. This could be where you see Clowney and Ansah and these guys have a big day, because unless they come up with something that we're not aware of yeah. in terms of personnel over there, that's just not a good offensive line. So you should be able to get pressure on Baker Mayfield, and if they can do that, he's shown he's going to make mistakes. He's not a great decision maker right now. He is not an accurate passer right now. And if you make him uncomfortable, it can be a long day for that team. So I think if they can do that above any, as much as the run is their thing, establishing that, which I think they will, if they can get pressure, consistent pressure, doesn't have to always be a sack, but just make him move his feet and run out of that pocket, I think you could have a big day.
What's your score prediction?
I'll call it 27-14.
No. For the CONCACAF matchup, USA
27-14. It's going to be unlike anything
right
you've
now?
Ever seen in the world of soccer.
Oh, wow. USA's taking on Cuba right now.
They're both
now.
Pulling their
yeah,
goalies. So it's going to be amazing.
That's going to be insane. I'm excited about that. Bob Stout, thanks for stopping by. You can check him out on 710 ESPN Seattle. Thanks, man.
You got it.
So, Jason Ranchel, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
So the left wants to claim that President Trump is responsible for all of the division in this country, and yet on full display last night was a very great example of how absurd that position is. You can call out Trump and his rhetoric all you want, and I think that you would have very good case to be made about how he's changed some of the rhetoric in this country. But at the exact same time, we've decided to allow folks on the left to claim every single person who's a Republican or a Trump supporter is a bigot, is a white supremacist, is an evil person. Last night, a man in a MAGA hat was talking to Vice News. It was right after the Minneapolis, Minnesota rally that we played a little bit of live last night. He's doing the interview and he gets spit in his face.
In 2016, something that the president was really proud of in his campaign was that it was self-funded and that he had a lot of small...
Oh, nice.
So sorry.
I'm fine. Sorry.
So a guy just walks by, and one of the protesters just walks on by and spits. You can sort of hear it in the clip. It's a little bit harder when we play it on the radio, but you can certainly see it. It's disgusting. And even the woman who he was talking to was just like, was thrown, and she wasn't even spit at.
I'm sorry that happened. That's not how people really feel.
Now, another protester walks up. Now, this is my favorite part, because he's still going to call this guy a bad dude, but say spitting is too far.
That's f***ing disrespectful. But on the other hand, that is disrespectful. So there's a difference.
I respect your opinion.
I didn't do that. That wasn't me. I was just trying to take a picture. It's all right.
You have a better attitude about that than
well,
I
Well, I'm telling you, you know.
Does that surprise you?
That did surprise me a little bit.
I had to say, I'm not surprised all that much. I mean, I don't expect anyone to get spit on, but that it happens, I'm not surprised by that. The way that progressives talk about Trump supporters. If anything, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more. But this is where we are. I'm a Jew who gets called the Nazi on a regular basis because I'm simply a conservative. They don't even call me out over Trump. They just say because I'm a conservative that I'm a Nazi. That's how they talk about folks. And then this is the This is the consequence of that kind of language. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to join the conversation on the Numbetter Tax Resolution Hotline.
Snoqualmie, Mercer Island, Des Moines.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Shoreline, Woodinville, Burien.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Yo. Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. It means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. Concept is very, very simple. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle, so we spend our time focused on the communities you live in, you care about most, and we completely ignore the city of Seattle. And we start in Yakima County because officials there are rightfully bragging about a very effective program that ended up reducing crime. It's called Operation Invictus. And this is what it resulted in. Before we even get into what it is they did, I want you to listen to their results. And I just want you in your head to think about what they might have done to do this. 246 arrests between June 7th and September 20th, so 246 arrests, the seizure of 4.5 pounds of drugs, and more than 30 guns. Also during that time, no homicides, and an overall reduction in violent crime reported in the city compared with the same period last year. This according to the Yakima Herald. That's intense. Those are great results. What do you think they did? Think about it for a second. What do you think they did? Because it was actually nothing innovative. They did absolutely nothing innovative. That's not me calling them out. This is not a criticism. You know what they did? Police work. It's literally all they did. They got together. They got the help of the feds in going after gangs. They did what law enforcement is supposed to do, which is enforce the law. Now, I suppose the one innovative thing, in a way, I suppose, when we're talking about government agencies, is that they decided to have a better sort of system in talking with each other, the agencies connecting and sharing resources and information. But all they did was enforce the law. We pretend way too often in this state, in this country, that law enforcement doesn't need to have a focus at the top of the list of going after these things, that we don't have to be police focused, that we should be instead focused on social programs, focused on resources, which should be a part of any conversation here and any plan. But they decided to put police work first. Look what happened. Now, you should also address the root causes of violence. In this case, this is all being pretty, almost all being forwarded by gang violence. They had, between 2014 and 2018, a 38% increase in violent crime, and they blamed gang violence. Going after gang violence sometimes means just being disruptive to the work that they're doing, arresting the kids who are breaking the law, and then you can go ahead and move forward on focusing on the root causes of gang violence. That's incredibly important. And we should be putting resources into that, because when you get kids in a loving household with adults who care about them, you give them something to do so they're not bored and then feel tempted to be taken advantage of by some gangbanger who knows that they're bored and needs something, like, all important. But sometimes you just go after the gangs with cops, and look what happens. 246 arrests. Meanwhile, we have an update on a story that we brought to you about 2-3 weeks ago. The only shelter serving the homeless in Kitsap County, the overnight shelter, will close on Sunday.
It's the only place that you could get off the street and have a nice place to sleep at night and take a shower.
So that's a homeless individual. This is a low barrier homeless encampment, by the way. There is high demand. There's no doubt about it. They've got 26 beds at the Kitsap Rescue Mission, but the shelter has finally lost a fight to stay open in the city of Bremerton because it's not safe. And we're not talking about the fact that it is low barrier. We're not talking about the fact that some of the people there might be unsafe. They don't have sprinklers. That's a problem. And for those of you who are saying, okay, maybe the city of Bremerton should have worked a little bit harder working with them, giving them some time, they've been dealing with this for years. Kitsap Rescue Mission has had years to put in these sprinklers, but they didn't. And now, finally, there's a consequence.
It broke my heart. It did. I just wish the city would see it, to feel it, to know that it means so much.
They do. They worked with the mission for years. At some point, you're going to have to get involved. Because, let's be clear, if, God forbid, a fire were to break out there at night when you've got 26 full beds with sleeping human beings who end up dying because of the fire, then the city's in much bigger trouble. Yes? Executive Director Nancy Olson told Cairo 7 TV that they started serving the homeless before they even finished construction. They are committed.
Oh my gosh, how can people survive? These are our brothers and sisters. These are our neighbors.
So now she says they don't have the $150,000 they need to install the sprinkler system.
We opened the doors and we provided services instead of getting our construction finished. Yeah. We probably had, you know, the cart before the horse in a way, but we put people first.
No, you didn't put people first. If you put people first, you wouldn't be getting closed down because you didn't put in a sprinkler system as to the permit that you need to have requires. So you didn't put people first. If you put people first, you would have raised the $150,000, put the construction in place from the beginning, and you would have won this long-term battle. But you didn't. I don't think they did this with nefarious intent, right? I don't think they're bad people. Their hearts are clearly in the right place. But let us be clear, putting people first would have put in sprinklers so that you can stay in business way longer than you currently are. Finally, oh, and by the way, just here's some good news for folks who might be a little bit concerned, as we should be, because we don't want to just send people living out on the street. Salvation Army, which is just about a block away, they're temporarily giving these folks a room for overnight stays. So they're stepping up. They've got the permits in place. They're a safe building. So they're stepping up. Good for the Salvation Army if you want to donate money to them to help them push through with their program. Finally, I guess this is some cool developmental news in Covington. City leaders might turn the old Covington Elementary School into a downtown plaza for businesses, a police department, and city officers. Covington Police Chief Andrew McCurdy told King 5.
There's been a huge increase for police service needs as well. We have an unmarked door in the back of City Hall, and we've been looking for having a more accessible police office.
Just real quick, that seems shady. An unmarked door in the back of a building?
Yeah, what if there's an emergency? You know how mad I'd be running back and forth past an unmarked door? It's the door on the left!
Like, which door? What does it look like?
There's like six.
No, I'm here, but what does it look like?
It's the beige one.
They're all beige!
No,
is it this one over here?
No.
What about, is it this one?
No.
Can you not put on a sign?
No, those are expensive. We'd rather just build a new thing.
Is it that expensive?
Build a new plaza.
People can actually find when they're looking for it.
Yeah, that seems kind of smart. Covington is dealing with what a lot of smaller cities are dealing with. Lots of new people are moving there. Maybe they work nearby. Maybe they work in Kent and they want some more space that is affordable for their family. So they go into a community like Covington. The city is now trying to figure out exactly how it is they're going to grow. And you need to have a city filled with really good people, very good leaders who are able to be forward thinking about this kind of thing. Because right now, this is going to be in city council's hands. King 5 says city leaders bought about 10 acres from the Kent School District for $3.9 million this summer. The potential for downtown Covington is there, but city leaders said so far there's no timeline on when this property could be developed. I get excited, weirdly, about things like this. I like it when you're able, especially if you live in Covington or at least live in the surrounding areas, that you can have a part in the growth. All too often, a lot of us move into neighborhoods that have already been developed. Now, that's good, right? There's no growing pains associated with it. You don't have to wait for things to be built. But there is something about a city or a community taking shape where you as a voter, as a resident, can actually be a little bit more hands-on. Because what does that do? It makes you more connected to the community, to your neighbors, to the area that you live in and work in. And presumably, this means you're going to be spending more time there and not look to move or to upgrade because you've got that sort of ownership there. So that's really, I love stories like this. So kudos to the folks over in Covington. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution hotline. For those of you who are wondering, all two of you, and that includes producer Peyton, the United States is up 4-0 over Cuba in a U.S. men's national team matchup for CONCACAF.
Shout out to that other person who cares. I want them to feel welcomed to our show.
Yeah, but that if I feel like it means everybody else is not going to feel welcome because we're talking about soccer.
True.
By the way, I will say it's going to be 7-1. That's my prediction.
Seven?
Seven. U.S. is going to get seven. Cuba will eventually score one, and it'll be probably by like an own goal. 1-800-465-877. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Just real quick, what's the score? U.S. men's national team, United States taking on Cuba?
6-0. Am I allowed to say nil?
You are.
Okay.
Who said that this was going to happen this way?
You did.
Okay, just throwing that out there. Beto O'Rourke is desperate enough to start a culture war. And we're pretending in Twitter sphere that what he said is okay, but what people are responding to is not. So last night, he took a patently unconstitutional position on the CNN LGBTQ town hall. And what's most alarming is he didn't even hesitate with the decision that with the position that he took. Not even a little bit of a hesitation. He wants to punish faith-based organizations and churches for not holding political positions that he holds.
There can be no reward, no benefit, no tax break for anyone or any institution, any organization in America that denies the full human rights and the full civil rights of every single one of us. And so as president, we're going to make that a priority, and we are going to stop those who are infringing upon the human rights of our fellow Americans.
By infringing on the human rights of our fellow Americans, he believes that you have to force a church to have a ceremony for gay marriage. That's what he believes. That if you're a school, you have to hold the political positions that he holds. Now, the thing is, there are many people out there who support gay marriage, like myself, who also support religious freedoms and tax exemption status for faith-based organizations and churches, which include mosques, even though they would never actually call out a mosque. They would never dare call out Islam for holding views that they personally find horrific. They'll only do that against the Catholic Church. And a whole bunch of people called this out. German Lopez, Vox News of all places, Vox, okay? Not Fox, Vox, tweeted, "What makes this even worse is how unhesitating Beto was in saying he will give or take away tax breaks based on different political views. There was no pause or thought at all." Walter Olson over at the Cato Institute tweeted, "Aside from being grossly illiberal, anti-pluralist, and inflammatory, Beto O'Rourke's call for ending tax exemptions of religious groups that oppose same-sex marriage is also blatantly unconstitutional under current Supreme Court precedent." But of course, we're talking about Twitter and what happens on Twitter every single week. They go after Ben Shapiro. They put Media Matters and their henchmen, their propagandists, in positions of prominence when Ben starts to tweet and Ben starts to trend. And on his show later today, you will hear him ripping this very, very stupid Beto comment. And people are calling out this comment as encouraging mass violence.
People are not going to stand for that. They're not going to stand for that. And if you send a truant officer to remove my child, I have two choices at that point, right?
From a
if I have no place to move because you've now made this national federal policy, I now have two choices. One is to leave the country utterly. Two is to pick up a gun. Those are the only choices that you have left me. And now people on, how could you say stuff like that? How could you be so extreme? It's not extreme to defend the fundamental rights the Constitution was created in order to protect.
By the way, because that point right there is incredibly important. That is incredibly important. The purpose of the Second Amendment is to protect the First Amendment and all of our other rights. And when you go at the basic tenets of what this country stands for, you're asking for literal culture wars. That's what, and Beto O'Rourke knows that. He knows that.
These rights pre-exist government. My right to raise my child in my faith is my right. That is a First Amendment right. There's only one reason the government exists, to protect those rights, not invade those rights. It is my right to raise my child with the moral precepts that I find to be beneficial for my child. Beto O'Rourke does not get to raise my child. And if he tries, I will meet him at the door with a gun. That is insane. That is insane. If he tries to remove my child from my home, and well, he's not suggesting that. Where do you think this goes? What do you think the next step is?
And to show you how despicable Twitter is, this is right now how they talked about that comment. Okay, you heard the context of the Beto O'Rourke comment, and you heard a portion, I think, in context of Ben's point. Okay, this is how Twitter.com is expressing the controversy. Ben Shapiro says he'd pick up gun or leave the country over Beto O'Rourke's stance on gay marriage. Ben has no problem with Beto O'Rourke's stance on gay marriage. Ben has a problem with Beto O'Rourke saying, if you don't hold his position on gay marriage, you no longer have the right to express your religious views in a church and get tax-exempted status. That's not even a nuanced difference between what Ben actually said and what Twitter says he said. That's a fundamental difference. That's a lie, what Twitter is doing. And they're doing it because they don't like just kicking people off their platform who are popular, but they also really hate that people like Ben are popular on their platform. And so this is what they do. This is part of the silencing and bullying. Because they think Ben Shapiro is going to somehow stop holding positions that he holds because he's under attack by Twitter. That's not how it works. Not with Ben. I've known Ben since 17 years. Yeah, that's not how he acts. And none of what he actually said is nearly as bad as what Twitter wants you to believe. Because Twitter is highlighting folks who are saying Ben is asking for mass shootings. Yeah, okay, got it. It's disingenuous. Bad faith arguments. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. Send me your text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Got one more hour coming up at the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH.